The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we are back, and Nicole Auerbach later in the program. Jordan Rodgers breaking down what went wrong for Georgia. That's in the final hour. We had L. Duncan on earlier. If you've never seen a Georgia fan wrapped in a blanket, you might want to check it out. Let's take more phone calls here at 855-242-7285. And Ernest is up next. Good afternoon, Ernest.
Good afternoon, Paul. I have to admit, I'm just coming in kind of late today, so some of what I'm going to say may be redundant. But if other people think the same thing, that's good, because it means more than one person thinks that. But I tried to get in after Jerome yesterday, and it was too late. The Alabama, University of Alabama is a great school. It's got a lot of great fans. But I don't understand why some of them act like they got to browbeat other schools instead of being proud of their own school and realize they're expected to beat Georgia. So what's the big deal when they do? They want to rub it in the ground. But this thing where they say that you picked Georgia, I don't know what it's looking at. All week long, you were real careful not to pick sides. You said what other people believed who was going to win, and the stats sort of indicated they had a better team, and based on their record. But yet, they want to say that you picked Georgia. You actually said that if Georgia played a bad game and Alabama played a good game, then Alabama would win. That's, you know, and the thing is, Alabama's going to have to play two games now, like they played against Georgia. They got to play their A game against Cincinnati and the A game against Michigan. But I'm a Georgia fan, but right now, I'm not going to, you know, I didn't expect Georgia to win Saturday, but boy, I'll take 12 wins any year. I'll take 12. As long as I'm like a guy from Michigan. If we beat Auburn, hey, I've told people before, we beat Auburn, I don't care if we win another game. But anyway, you're great, because you sit there with that wry smile and let them run their mouth, and you just think to yourself, well, you're making a fool out of yourself. And that's basically what I got to say about it. But you do a good job of not losing your cool, and that really just burns them.
Ernest, thank you very, very much. I will say this. In the aftermath of a game like that, you're going to get the reaction. And we do this and love it, and we hear it. And yeah, it would, in a perfect world, it would be nice if fans didn't feel like they had to demean the quarterback of the other school by, you know, saying unconscionable things. But I'm not going to be the arbiter of good and decency, considering what I do for a living. Let's talk to Chuck in Texas. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Paul, thank you so much for taking my call. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, Paul, I've done some research here on the SEC, being a big football fan. I came across something I thought was really interesting. I never knew for the life of me that Georgia Tech was once part of the SEC conference. It just blows me away. And I was asking you, wanted to ask you, why did Bobby Dodd and the Yellow Jackets leave the SEC in 62 or 63, I believe?
I would rather somebody with more knowledge answer this, but I'll try to remember. There was always bad blood, especially between Bobby Dodd and Paul Bryant, and I think that was at the root of it. And okay, it turned out to be, and Bobby Dodd is a legendary figure and a great coach.
Oh, but
it turned out to be one of the worst decisions that school ever made. And by the way, Tulane also bailed out of the SEC,
yeah,
and I don't know the reason for that. But you know, that you think about Tulane, and they've had some runs over the years. But you know, how much better that program would have been had they stuck around. Now, both are very fine schools, and I'd have
very
to. I mean, there was a time when I remember. Here's my best memory of that, when Alabama hired Bill Curry in 1987 from Georgia Tech. The old guard of Alabama was up in arms, and it wasn't about Bill Curry, it was about the fact that he played for Bobby Dodd.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, I just remember someone was telling me, my nephew's a proud graduate of Bama, and he was telling me that the reason they left because he could not beat Bear Bryant. I think he was like 1-5 in conference and 1-7 overall. against the Bear. He just could never compete or beat Paul Bear Bryant, so they said, hello, ACC, we're out of here.
Yeah, and it, you know, Georgia Tech went through a couple of leagues before they ended up landing in the ACC. But it's a real, I know there's a lot more to it, a lot more intricate details. Tulane, I'll defer to somebody from New Orleans, but those are the most recent defections. I mean, the idea of leaving the SEC, and again, we're talking about, what, 50, 60 years ago, so it's been a while. Thank you for the call. I do appreciate it very, very much. Jeremiah, no, it wasn't a bullfrog, but Jeremiah is in Georgia. Hello, Jeremiah.
How are you doing, Mr. Paul?
We're doing great. Thank you
for having me on your show. I just want to talk about the fact that Georgia will lose to Michigan in their upcoming game. And the fact is, they have the number one defense, a star-studded offense. Okay, they're not anything less than what they can. So, like, the same, pretty much the same as Alabama. They can push the ball down the field. They can run the ball. They got a studded tight end. He's a freshman. So you can build off of that. But they won't beat Michigan at all. You know, the fans here in the state of Georgia believe that, oh, we'll just make it to the championship. No, there's a process behind that. And instead of worrying about facing Alabama, their biggest fear and their biggest kryptonite, they need to worry about Michigan. Because Michigan will come in. They will run the ball on them and beat them that way.
Well, I don't know, but I certainly would not be looking ahead if I had that opponent next. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Will in Tuscaloosa. Hey, Will.
Hey, Paul. First time caller, long time listener.
Thank you.
I just wanted to know how in the heck Will Anderson Jr. did not get an invite to New York for the Heisman Trophy. I mean, I think it's just a joke, Paul. He's got 91 tackles on the year, 31 tackles for loss, and 15 sacks. I mean, compare that to Aiden Hutchinson, who did get the invite.
Well, you know what? I think the answer is they both deserved it. And, you know, I've already violated all the rules by saying I voted for Will Anderson on my top three. But he really did. I mean, the argument has been made by many, many people that he's the best player in college football. And you can always debate that, but I don't know, you know, how he. I think Hutchinson's rise late hurt him probably, and I also think that I don't think Bryce Young getting a bunch of first place votes affected him, but after that, I'll just take you through my process yesterday. I think Bryce Young will be almost unanimous. He won't be unanimous, but he'll have an avalanche of first place votes. And after that, you start trying to go down the list. Will Anderson, Hutchinson, Pickett, Stroud. I don't think there was a clear cut next choice, but I'm sure in the Midwest, Anderson was hurt by Hutchinson being listed second or third on a lot of ballots. Thank you very, very much. Great to have you on. David is up next. Hello, David.
Good afternoon.
Hey there.
You were talking earlier about the weather in Miami.
Yes.
And I remember back when Alabama played Notre Dame in Miami, those Notre Dame boys were sweating like the Alabama summertime from the humidity.
They were. I'll never forget being on the field before that game. And I was talking to somebody from the NFL. He was a GM or somebody. And he said, I have never seen a bigger mismatch, at least in pregame, in my life. I mean, Alabama looks like a professional team. Notre Dame just looks like a good college team. And, you know, that game was very fast, as you mentioned. And I don't know if that was a big factor. It was 72 degrees that night. It wasn't like it was 95 in the middle of August. But the biggest factor, though, is not playing in any conditions whatsoever, and that's why coaches love playing inside a stadium like Arlington or Atlanta or somewhere else. We'll take a break. More to come. More right after this message.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey, welcome back. It is always great to get back to the calls, and Legend is next.
What's going on, brother?
Hey, Legend.
Man, Paul, I want to tell you something, man. You and that Ellie girl, there's some magic there, brother. I think y'all got a show, man. I'm just telling you, that was magical, dude. I mean, I was impressed with her. I mean, she's funny as hell, man. She's funny as hell. And since it's time, Paul, I'm going to send her one of my 18 national championship rings to cheer her up, Paul. I will let her see it. Paul, let her hold it in her hand. Hold it, Ellie. Hold it, baby. Because as a lifelong Orioles fan, we won our last championship in 83. That's 3 years after y'all. But, I mean, I know what it seems like, baby. That was magical, dude.
Well, thank you, Legend. Yeah, for those who missed it, L. Duncan was here earlier, and you just have to see it. I can't describe it.
I want everybody to go, and you'll say these two.
Hey, Legend, is there any chance you could come up with a better phone line here? We're having a hard time hearing you. Good call or not, we only could hear about every third word he said. So we'll try that again in a minute. Let's talk to Tony in Georgia. Hey, Tony.
What's up, Paul?
Hey there, Tony.
We got to talk about Stetson Bennett.
Go right ahead.
Kirby Smart's got to step up and make the right decision. He didn't make it with Fromm. He needs to make it now before we lose our season.
Well, I think this is easier than Fromm because JT Daniels is far more accomplished at this point than Justin Fields was when he had to make that call.
That's right. But he's got to make the change now. He didn't make it then. He needs to make it now.
Well, we will see if he will. Thanks for the call. Randy is up next in San Diego. Hey, Randy.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, I just got a couple things I want to say. First of all, I called you last week, and I was complaining about the Georgia fans and how obnoxious they were and everything, and I had told you that if we could get our offensive line together, that we could put up a lot of points, and you agreed, and that's exactly what happened. Secondly, I want to say to Elle, I feel so bad for her. There, if Alabama were to play Georgia in the national championship and lose, at least I would have one bright spot because I feel bad for her. Oh, man. God, I just feel really bad for her. So there will be some light at the end of the tunnel if they play again and Alabama were to lose. L, if you're hearing, if you're listening, I feel for you. Roll Tide.
I will make sure she hears that. Peggy is up next in Virginia. Hello, Peggy.
Hi, Paul. This is my second time talking to you, but a lifelong fan.
Thank you.
And I will give a shout out to everybody that I know. But look here, I love you, Paul, and no doubt about it, I love Georgia, but I believe that Georgia just respected Nick Saban by letting him win like that because they are such a good defense. And I just want to say I love you, Paul, even though I don't know a lot about football.
Well, that is very nice of you to say, Peggy. We appreciate it, and we hope we can talk again very soon. You take care of yourself. Let's check out Jerome next in Alabama. Hello, Jerome.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
It's very well. Thank you.
Good deal. I've got a friend that lives above me. He's from Texas. And I told him that we were playing Cincinnati in the Cotton Bowl at AT&T Stadium. Oh, no, that's played in the open field. I said, Dave, that's years ago. Would you please let my friend know? with a Cotton Bowl is.
Yeah, that is confusing because in Dallas there is a Cotton Bowl where we're in the state where the state fair is held and where the OU Texas game became legendary. It's a great stadium. I've been to it many times. But that's not where the Cotton Bowl game is played anymore. It's played in Arlington, which is about 35 miles away.
Yes, sir. He did mention the Oklahoma-Texas game, and I kept telling him, I said, not today, Dave.
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, not that I'm an expert with the Metroplex, but I have been there a few times. Let's continue with more phone calls, and Bob is up next.
Hey, Bob. 89 degrees, and she felt good to her.
Bob, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Long time. Yeah, a long time.
I heard it felt good to her. I wanted to hear more of that. Lay it on me, brother.
Anyway, I was wondering, I'm a big Alabama fan, but you answered a question. Somebody asked you a question I was going to answer, so I'm not going to ask you there. But I would like to know, what do you think about Lane Kiffin, and what do you think about Ole Miss's chance in the Sugar Bowl?
Well, I am incredibly impressed with Lane Kiffin. He's just agreed to a new contract, and he deserves it. The fact that, Ole Miss is in the Sugar Bowl for the first time. Somebody's going to have to help me here, but
it's a while.
60s, maybe? 60s
or 70s.
That
sounds about right.
Yeah. And the point being, growing up down the road or up the road from Ole Miss, the Sugar Bowl is a big deal to Ole Miss people. It may not be a big deal if you're in another part of the country, but I like their chances. Baylor's a really good team, but you're matching up a really big-time defensive mind in Dave Aranda versus Lane Kiffin. They faced each other before when Lane was at Alabama, so I'm excited about that game. Let's continue. Nicole Arabeck will join us in a few minutes. Let's check in with Joe from Red Bay, Alabama.
Roll Tide, roll, Paul. And I promise you, I tried I had things to do yesterday, so I got in kind of late, and then I tried to call you late. And so, that's on me. But, I had to help a lady out. She had to get her furnace lit up. And so, but anyway, Paul, let's go back to next Thursday if we can. And you remember when you told me about these ESPN experts, when I didn't get the score right, I guessed like a 30 to 15, 14. And you kind of laughed. I mean, we did beat them. We actually did better. We beat them a 17. So, I just got to toot my own horn there just for a second. But let's look at this, the big picture here. All these SEC teams playing. And I think every one of them, and I'm going to be for every one of them except for the Barners, to win their bowl games. And I want to give congratulations to Ole Miss, for making theirs. But, Paul, when we beat Georgia Saturday, When we lifted up that trophy, Paul, I'll be honest, I was happier than a rooster in a hen pen. I mean, I did a buck dance here in the living room, and I knocked over the coffee table, spilt my drink. But you know what? I didn't mind the cleanup, and I didn't.
Let me make sure I understood you. You said you described the scene for us again.
Well, I mean,
What were you wearing?
Well, I mean, I was happier than a rooster in a hen pen.
No,
I was wearing clothes. I wasn't sitting at home naked.
Okay.
I thought
you had said that at first, and I was concerned, especially for your neighbors. You were drinking what?
My mom may be listening, so I don't want to say everything I was drinking. But, I'll just say when the sun come up, I had a adult beverage with ham and eggs for breakfast. And then I snoozed all day Sunday, and it was just, because Paul, everybody out there was picking Alabama to lose. And I can see where they was coming from that if you looked at Georgia play this year. And I know you did. I mean, Georgia did look tough, and it looked like an insurmountable, you know, task for Alabama. And, Alabama just fed off of that. And, you know, Nick Saban said it better. You know, that rat poison was yummy. That was yummy. But, you know,
By the way, let me correct myself. I forgot Ole Miss had been in the Sugar Bowl four or five years ago, so I apologize. I thought it had been a longer period. But we are going to come back. I don't know what Joe was talking about, but if you want to hear more, you can certainly go to his YouTube channel. Let's take a break here and say that Nicole Auerbach will join us next. We'll talk about the Heisman, the college football playoff. She was at the Big Ten game the other night. We'll talk to her about that.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And so much to talk about, not only about the CFP, but about this weekend's Heisman. Nicole Auerbach joining us, and she had quite a few choice words about the finalists. And many are wondering about what happened to Will Anderson. Nicole, great to have you on. I want to talk about the Big Ten Championship, which I know you covered. Great to have you on. Let's start with what we learned about this time yesterday. The four finalists for the Heisman, many Alabama fans and fans of college football are wondering what happened to Will Anderson Jr. Do you have any idea?
No. And as you can tell, because I was trying to process this aloud, I mean, the only thing I can think of is that people were just looking at quarterback stat lines, as they often do, and there's too many voters who don't pay attention to this. Because if you watched Alabama, you would have seen Will Anderson when you were watching Bryce Young. If you watch both sides of the ball, they both should have been Heisman finalists. Because if you think that Bryce Young was valuable, then you also know that Will Anderson was as well. And, you know, his stats, I mean, maybe people did not see them compared to Ndamukong Suh the way that we were seeing, and just the it was just remarkable. I could not understand that he wouldn't be there, because defensive players don't often have stat lines like Will Anderson did. But again, if you just watched Alabama, you would have known. So it's frustrating, because I just don't think Heisman voters understand that they are allowed to vote for defensive players, or they don't understand how to evaluate their value. But to me, this one was pretty clear cut. And I don't understand how you could vote for one Alabama player, but not put both high enough on your ballot that they would both be finalists.
Yeah, I mean, you have three choices, and I think there are some good choices after Bryce Young and Will Anderson, but it's not as if there are three absolute choices. I mean, last year there were five, and two or three of them were pretty obvious, and then it got a little more tricky. Let me get to what we learned Saturday. You were watching all of this unfold at the Big Ten Championship, just as you were in that press box watching what was happening in Atlanta. What was the reaction? And I'm curious what Georgia does now as they get ready for what you saw in Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, I've been at Michigan's last two games, which, you know, I'm not sure how many people necessarily saw them unfolding the way that they did, and how dominant Michigan has been over the last couple of weeks. And I think what you see is honestly what the committee has been trying to tell us for some time here, that this is a very balanced, complete team. And, you know, they're peaking at the right time. And that's something that, you know, I'm sure anyone they were going to draw in the playoffs would be worried about, because, you know, this is an offense that in the beginning of the year you were saying, okay, well, Michigan, you know, is running the ball, they're running the ball, but can they win a game if it needs to be on the shoulders of Cade McNamara? Well, we have seen them do that. We have seen them when they've, you know, given up a lead late against Penn State and coming back to win the game. We've seen them win at Camp Randall. We've seen them do things that they typically haven't done. in Jim Harbaugh's tenure. And they're just a tougher team. They're physical at the line of scrimmage. And I think that all of that, the commitment to the rushing attack early, has really established a lot of things that they want to do late in the season. It allowed them to do what they did in the second half against Ohio State, so to put the game away. You know, and it's allowed some of the younger receivers time to emerge and become go-to guys. They've added different wrinkles to the offense. We saw some trick plays in the Big Ten championship game. But I think the most impressive piece is just how dominant they've been over the last couple of weeks, because, again, they eked out games against, like, Rutgers earlier in the season. And now they are just firing on all cylinders. They're so confident. And, you know, I think as much as Georgia fans are, you know, love their defense, it's the same for Michigan. There's actually a lot of parallels between the way that these teams win games. And their defensive tackles and the pressure that David Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson put on quarterbacks is something that I think, you know, Georgia's got to be concerned about, especially, you know, when we saw Stetson Bennett and what it was like when Georgia was down in a game and there's a lot of pressure on the quarterback's shoulders in that position. But really, they do win a lot of games in a similar way that Georgia does. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of mutual respect between both these programs and what they've been able to do. But, you know, you've talked about it and you've talked about Jim Harbaugh throughout his tenure. It's just remarkable what they've been able to do, especially coming off of, you know, where the program was this time a year ago to where it is right now.
Nicole, how has Jim Harbaugh done this?
Well, it's a good question, because we don't see turnarounds like this very often, and certainly not this fast. But, you know, it really does start with overhauling his entire staff, which, you know, in a lot of cases we see schools fire the head coach instead of doing what happened in Ann Arbor last offseason, which was saying, okay, we're going to keep the head coach and trust that you can fix it, but you've got to question the way that you do everything. And so he overhauled the whole staff. You know, a lot has been made about that. It's a young staff. There's different pieces, different dynamics, different ways that they do things defensively. You know, we've seen that Don Brown defense, and we saw it get torched by Ohio State repeatedly, right? And now they're built differently now. But what's impressive is this roster is a lot of the same guys who were on this team last year. And it's just totally different. And the players will tell you that they started to feel things differently just in terms of team chemistry, but Harbaugh started to see things differently in terms of what they could do as an offensive line, what they could do with the run game. And again, you know, David Ojabo's development opposite Aiden Hutchinson, he started to see all of that in the spring. So that's where the groundwork was laid. But, you know, they had to learn how to win games that they used to lose. And that part is really hard. And I don't know if you can necessarily know that a team is going to do that until they actually do that. So by the time they got to Ohio State, like, they were ready. They had been getting better in different ways throughout the season. They were a lot tougher. And then they just manhandled Ohio State and beat Ohio State the way that they've so often been beaten by the Buckeyes. And I think that that really propelled them. You know, obviously Iowa's offense leaves a lot to be desired, but still the margin of that game, the way that they won that game, you can just tell that this is a confident team that is really, you know, peaking right now.
Nicole, I realize we have 3 weeks to obsess over this, but just in terms of what you've seen from Georgia this year, especially Saturday, what you've watched very closely of Michigan, I mean, what gives here, and what are the roads to victory in this game?
Yeah, it's a good question, and you know, I'm super curious to see how Georgia responds to the type of loss that they had. I mean, that wasn't close. They haven't been through anything like that this season. It got to the point where everyone started questioning, what is their best win? Who have they played? What did we make of Georgia all season long? Like, that's never a good place to be after a loss. But, you know, we've seen them have some of these crushing losses to Alabama before, but end of the season. Like, this is, they have time. They have time to regroup and come back from this and to figure out what to do with the quarterback position, to figure out, you know, approaches to take to buy time and protect whoever is at quarterback against, you know, this aggressive defensive front for Michigan. But, you know, I'm just curious as well, because Michigan did show a lot. They did do some trick plays in the Big Ten title game. They showed some movements and motion that they did against Ohio State they hadn't done against anyone else. Do they still have something up their sleeve, you know, or will Georgia be able to get all of that on film? I think that's going to be really interesting. But also, you know, Michigan's limiting factor, or at least, you know, perceived to be, has been the quarterback position as well. And this is, again, another parallel. Cade McNamara isn't, you know, a Bryce Young. He isn't that type of player. and they do have young receivers. What's going to happen if Georgia is able to take the run game out of the game for Michigan? You know, what happens if this game is played in a different way than either team is necessarily comfortable or has won games in the past? I mean, all of that I think is really interesting, as well as this element of, you know, Kirby Smart's had these really, really talented teams, but he hasn't won the national championship, and they've had these excruciating losses. And then you have Jim Harbaugh, who is now doing the things that people weren't sure he was ever going to do at Michigan. So there's so much at stake, I think, in terms of legacy for the coaches. And I'm really curious how that plays out in terms of, you know, in-game management as well in those big moments. So there's going to be a lot of really interesting angles to this. But I'm so intrigued by the idea that they're built in really similar ways. And what does that mean in terms of the way they're able to prepare for their opponent? But then also, what does that do for these quarterbacks that are going to put a lot on their shoulders?
Nicole, before you go, it's easy if you're a fan in the South to see the Alabama-Cincinnati matchup. Vegas has chimed in, and not to take Cincinnati very seriously. And I know you've seen this team a lot throughout the fall. Tell us about them and what should concern Alabama fans if they're going ahead and looking ahead to Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati, you know, obviously they haven't had the same level of competition as everybody else. So, you know, maybe there's only certain games that you kind of really want to look for and see what they played and how they got up for them. But they were up for their biggest games of the year. And I saw them beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame. And listen, the Irish did get better as the season went on. They figured some things out with their offensive line and how they were kind of maneuvering quarterbacks into the game. But Cincinnati thoroughly beat them. Like, the score did not reflect how thorough that domination was and how over the game was. Desmond Ridder is incredibly tough. You know, he's not going to be, again, he's not the most talented quarterback that we have in college football, but he is incredibly tough. He makes good decisions. And you can see how much trust Luke Fickell has in him with the game on the line. But defensively, like, that's where you look and you love what you see. I mean, that's what I love about these teams in the playoff this year, are the defenses that we get to see. But, like, Sauce Gardner is terrific. They're really aggressive. I saw them get a bunch of takeaways. Feels like they're often doing that and changing the game. So you can't make mistakes on them. They're going to be able to cover, you know, the outside. They're going to cover receivers. They're going to be a thorn in the side. I mean, they're just a very sound defensive team, which is not a surprise if anyone's watched Cincinnati the last few years. And I think that, you know, they've clearly learned from what happened with Georgia. That was a game that they should have won and they had control of. And they didn't let that happen this year, even in some of their biggest games. You know, there was one turning point in the Indiana game. This was before, you know, kind of Indiana fell off a cliff. But there was a targeting call that kind of changed the game because they weren't playing that well in the first half. And so you watch them respond after that call, after the game flipped, and then start to take over. And again, they force turnovers. They do different things. Games get out of hand like they did, you know, against SMU really quickly. So that's where they're dangerous. And they do have really good, hard, physical, talented players. But again, their level of competition hasn't been there. We get all of that. It's really hard to win all your games. We've seen that repeatedly over the years. They're the only undefeated team this season. But also, like, I saw them play Notre Dame, who, you know, is a top five team in the country this year. They match up with them physically. They can play. They can hang. We saw that against Georgia, too. So, you know, I people are going to frame it as a David versus Goliath thing just because of the conference affiliation. But they belong. They belong. And I think Alabama is going to recognize that they're going to be just as much a challenge as anyone you could have drawn in the playoff.
Nicole Auerbach, a fantastic discussion. Nicole, thank you. Always great to have you on.
Absolutely. Happy holidays, Paul.
You got it. See you soon. Nicole, one of the absolute best in college football, and we will take a break. Jordan Rogers will break it all down in the final hour, and your phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we are back, and Jim is up next in Tuscaloosa.
I give my opinion, and you call her a great guest. Well, I muted her, Paul, but that's beside the point. I know that's not what I call her about.
Why did you mute her?
I don't like her. I don't like her, Paul. It's simple enough. I don't like her. You know me. I'm gonna tell you like it is. I don't pull punches. I don't waste words. I don't like her. I don't like Heather Spinach. And by the way,
Jim, do you have a? I mean, is there some?
I love Baby Reese. I think she's a star.
So, but is there something? Do you have something against women offering opinions on college football?
Look, Paul, there you go. I just told you all I'm gonna tell you. I don't like that woman, and that's all I got to say. Now, you want to go to what I called about? Thanks, Jamari. You're doing a great job. Thanks, Jamari. Can I talk, Paul?
You may.
I called about Will Anderson Jr.
Okay.
Don't sweat it, and don't worry about Will Anderson Jr. Nicole or anybody else, don't worry. He's doing fine. I saw a clip of him with of his sisters. He's got a great family. He's blessed. And did you see him hug the way he hugged Bryce Young? I think it was before the game the other day. I just love that.
He'll get over not going to New York. If I never went back to New York,
believe
I'd be
me, he's
happy
already
too.
Over it. He knew who was going to win, and he's all for, I'm sure, who's supposed to win and who's going to win, Bryce Young. But Will Anderson's just, I love his sisters. He's a great family, and that really got to me the way he's got four or five sisters. I saw him, and he's got a meek smile. He's a meek, nice guy. That's a good guy. I like that guy.
Well, I'm glad you do.
What was that, Paul?
No, I don't know his family, but I hope to meet them one day.
No, I heard something background. What was that?
Well, you know, the guys in the booth, they're just having
they're obscene what they are. They're idiots. I might as well hit the barrel on all of them. They're nothing but idiots. See what they do to a call? I made a good call.
Well, Jim,
I'm the most famous guy on the show.
I don't have control of all these audio effects.
Yeah, I know. You don't. You have to explain that to us. We know you don't have control anymore. We know that, Paul.
Yeah, no, I've lost all control. I'm just a.
Just don't get me.
Don't get me started. Truth be known, Jim, I'm not even here.
Your show?
I'm off today.
Those fools are running your show, Paul.
Remember the movie from the 80s, Weekend at Bernie's? They prop the guy up?
No, I didn't watch the 80s movies. You know, I wasn't born in 85.
You were too. Was Weekend at Bernie's in
the
90s?
That's exactly right, Paul. That's exactly right.
I don't know when Weekend at Bernie's
was. Hey, Paul. F them, those guys. F those guys. F them. See you, baby. See you.
Wow. Weekend at Bernie's was 1989, so Jim was probably a teenager. Well, he wasn't a teenager. He was 3 years old at the time. That was 30 years ago.